a savvy business move last night. I'm joking. I saw you tweet at like 1:30 Eastern about the Flames game. That's not bad, knowing you're coming on Calgary Radio the next day. That shows dedication, because there was a lot of people tuned into that game.
I'm working on my blog, so I'm up that late anyway.
Oh, okay. Okay. I just thought it was a savvy move on your part. Like, it's kind of self, you know, that's
I'm not that smart.
Oh, I think you are. But see, I think you are. Interesting game, eh?
You know, it was a really good game. Sometimes when you're on the road, and even good teams especially, and I think Calgary is really morphing into an improved team, you know you just have to weather the storm.
Yeah.
Like, keep it close. Like, don't get blown out, and then we may have a chance later. And when you're a team like Calgary has, that's kind of been through a few of those games this year, you get into that second intermission, and you're still scoreless despite the fact the ice has been tilted. You're kind of like, you know what, we got them right where we want them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think it's a way to win a lot of games, but for whatever reason, you guys have had this year, and you can see the confidence growing with the team in front of Ordeo. Like, they think that they can win with him in goal, and that's why you look at San Jose, you look at L.A., even when things go sideways for a time, they find a way.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, the one thing I've been saying today, I've been replaying a clip from Brad Treliving that he said to us last week, a game like last night, the 2 points are great. But for a young team like Calgary to play a battle-hardened team, a Stanley Cup defending team, that was big boy hockey last night.
Yeah.
That one's going to pay some dividends down the road, I think, especially for the young guys.
And they were skating rings around you for a while, too. So you understand what it's like to play against the best of the best. Like, that's what it's like.
Right.
And you've had a couple games like that this year. The game against Chicago early in the season where Hiller bailed you guys out. You get an understanding of, you know, what it's like to win a game like that and be in a game like that and how important goaltending is. Like, you can talk about, you know, Doug McLean has a saying, I was always a better coach when I had a great goalie. And I totally see it. When you have a goalie who can cover up all your mistakes or keep you in games when you're having rough nights, you know, that's different. And I have to tell you something else I really noticed last night. Like, there were a couple of times where Giordano got in scrums, and the Flames were there. Like, he's the captain. We're taking care of him. And if you pick on him, you're going to have to pick on all of us. There was some weird stuff going on last night with Toronto where, you know, Eric Staal fought Phaneuf at one point because Phaneuf hit Jordan, and it was a clean hit.
Right.
There was no issue with the hit Phaneuf put on Jordan. But at the end of the game, Carolina had the puck for an empty netter, and Eric Staal had it in the slot like he was close, and Phaneuf was the only guy between him and the net, and Eric Staal wound up and slapped it. And he didn't care. He basically admitted he knew Phaneuf was there. He was either getting Phaneuf or he was getting the goal. And it's the second time in a week that a player has shot the puck at Phaneuf. Joe Thornton did it against San Jose, and nothing happens. And in this particular situation last night, I didn't think Phaneuf was wrong for not doing anything because he'd already fought Staal.
Mm-hmm.
But I was wondering where the rest of the team was. And I thought it was interesting that later on in the game against L.A., you know, Giordano had a couple of scrums, and your guys were right in there to make sure he wasn't alone. The juxtaposition of it was quite striking to me.
Well, having watched this team, you know, kind of in the position the Maple Leafs were in for a couple of years with, you know, high expectations but not getting there, that was always an issue around here. That there didn't seem to be anybody. They, you know, this is a very tight-knit group, which I would ask the question then about the Maple Leafs. Are we talking about a Dion Phaneuf issue, or are we just talking about overall malaise within that locker room?
I think it's overall malaise. Like, you know, we've talked about it before, Rob, about what a lightning rod he is, and nobody in Calgary needs to be told that. But, you know, I remember a story a few years ago when Ty Domi was still in Toronto. He had a teammate who I knew did not like him because he used to tell me that he Domi drove him nuts.
Yeah.
And then there was a game where Domi got run, and it didn't happen very often, but he got kind of surprised. And this teammate went right after the guy who did it and fought him. And you could see Domi really appreciated it. And I said to the guy after the game, I thought he didn't like Domi. And he goes, I don't, but he's a teammate. And that was on the ice. And, you know, I think good teams, they put that behind them. Whether you like a teammate or not, you know, it's like the Oakland A's of the mid-70s. They won 3 straight World Series and nobody liked each other. But I think you find a way to put that behind you for the greater goal or the greater purpose when you're on ice together. And, you know, we're not seeing that in Toronto. I think a lot of it is also that their season is going down the drain right now, and it's a very difficult place to be when things are going badly. But it just adds to the overall feeling that you have about them right now.
Well, and it's certainly palatable. To me, I'm just wondering about you guys. I'm worried about burnout there because there's so much being written, so much being talked about. I don't know how much is there much that's really new about this situation, Elliot, as you see it?
I think the only thing that's really new is the stuff, and I give Damian credit because he reported on Saturday night on the show, is that I believe the team has decided that they're not going to add this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not going to sit there and say, okay, we're going to trade something to get us into the playoffs. They've decided that it's time for a new process to begin, and they have to see. Like, I think every player in Toronto is available. Some are worth more than others. Like, if you want to get a Morgan Riley or a James Van Riemsdyk, you're going to have to pay a lot more than for some of the other guys. But I think you're in a position where Toronto is going to ask everybody, look, if you wanted a player on our roster, A, who would it be? And B, what are you willing to pay for it? So it's not a short process. I think it takes time. But every one of those guys, like, if you want to call and ask about a player, they're willing to listen. It's just a matter of what they decide to do and how long it takes them to do it.
So difficult to make big trades now that they happen so rarely. I'm curious about the ancillary deals. Is there enough there? Is there anything there that other teams would want? You know, beyond.
Yes, there is.
Okay.
You know, the one thing is, sometimes a team looks bad and people say there's nobody on that team you'd want. I don't believe that's the case in a lot of places. Like, you look at the parts there, you can't tell me that somebody wouldn't want a James Van Riemsdyk. He's a winger who can score.
Right.
You can't tell me that somebody wouldn't want Phil Kessel, who's been a top 10 scorer. And like I said, we all know how much of a lightning rod Phaneuf is.
Yeah.
But I think there are teams that are definitely interested in it. Now, sometimes you have to get creative. He's got a big ticket, Rob, and it comes down to, are the Leafs going to take money? Are they going to have to take a contract back?
Sure.
Like, how does it work? I think, you know, with Phaneuf, like, for example, if they wanted to do Phaneuf for Mike Richards, I mentioned it on Saturday night just as a kind of throwaway.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could get done if the Leafs wanted to do it. I'm not convinced they want to do that. My personal belief is they're going to really see if they can do better, because they know there's a lot of teams out there who would look at Phaneuf and say, look, if he's not our number one guy, we think we can fit him in and make it work. It's just a matter of how creative you're willing to be. The only contract on the Toronto organization I believe is really and truly untradeable is David Clarkson's, because he can't buy it out. It's a buyout-proof contract, and I think that makes it very difficult.
See, I misrepresented the question, because I agree with you that the big deals could be done. They're there, but those happen so rarely. I'm more curious about, do the Leafs have something that they can move for second-round picks? Do they have something to acquire, you know, not top-end prospects, but good prospects? So those deals that we see made just before the trade deadline, do they have a lot of those types of players?
They have a couple of guys like that. They're going to talk to Mike Santarelli about a contract extension, and if they can't get it done, like, to me, he's a prime guy. I could see him, like, to me, I could see him helping a team like Calgary. He can play center. He can play the wing. He's a good player. You know, if you've gotten a chance to see much of him the last 2 years with Vancouver or Toronto, you can really see the guy can play. He's
right.
A good player.
Yeah.
Roman Polak, to me, is still another guy who I could help teams. You know, he's been hurt a little bit here this year, but if you're looking for a five defenseman, he's a really good one, and he's been a very competitive guy here. I do think they have those kinds of pieces. Another interesting one, it depends on, you know, what you think his value is, because I get really mixed reactions around the league, is a guy like Jake Gardiner.
Mm-hmm.
He's signed. He's got a contract. It's in the 5-year, $20 million range that, you know, the Jake Muzzins and the Alec Martinez and the Marco Scandellas have signed in the last few years. He's got some real offensive talent. He's a mess in his own zone, and they're really struggling to get it better. But, you know, he's a guy who, they as an organization, are testing out there, and I wonder if there would be the kind of – he's not a guy you're giving up for a third-round pick, but right. I think teams have known he's been available for so long. That's a deal that if you wanted to make, you could probably do it.
With Elliot Freeman from Hockey Night Canada and Sportsnet, let's shift gears and talk about outdoor games, one that doesn't appear to be happening and one that could be announced this weekend. What are we hearing in terms of the potential of an original six matchup with Boston and Montreal?
That's going to happen. It'll be Boston-Montreal, and this time they're not playing it at Fenway. They're going to play it at Gillette Stadium where the Patriots play. I believe we're going to see three, especially now that the Canadian one is out. It looks like it'll be Boston, it'll be Minnesota, and it'll be Colorado. I think those are the three teams. Those are the three that I believe are going to get games for next year. If there's somebody else, I'll freely admit I'm not aware of it right now.
Right.
But those are the teams, and I'm not sure all the opponents, but those look to be the three home sites. Now, the thing about Winnipeg is they had a statement tonight where they said they couldn't get it this year, but they hope to do it. Or they couldn't get it next year. They hope to do it in 2 years. In 2 years is the 100th anniversary of the National Hockey League, and both Ottawa and Toronto want that game.
Right.
The Heritage Classic that year. So I'm not sure if that means that Winnipeg is going to be able, they're going to do two Heritage Classics that year, or maybe Winnipeg might have to wait 2 years.
Shift gears and come back to the local hockey heroes for a second, but I'd like your opinion on what Johnny Gaudreau may or may not mean to the business of the Calgary Flames, their brand, so to speak, outside the borders of Calgary. On the cover of the Hockey News this week, and today the announcement from the National Hockey League, he's one of three players that fans can vote into the Honda All-Star Game and the Breakaway Challenge. You know, he's a big deal in the Northeast because of the Hobie Baker. I'm curious. I mean, you know, Jerome McGinley was a great face of this team. He was a national spokesperson for all kinds of companies. Is Johnny Gaudreau good for the Flames business-wise outside the borders of Alberta?
Yes, I think he is, because people like underdogs. They like athletes who don't always look like who more look like them than, I guess, for lack of a better term, athletes do. You know, he doesn't look like a hockey player, but he's a talented guy, and he's making a difference. And people gravitate to that. They like that. They root for the underdog story. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise the whole thing, it doesn't surprise me. I know they looked at it early in the year about trademarking and doing some ads or various sponsorships, and they were unsure about how quickly they should do it because you didn't want to try to take advantage of it when he wasn't really an NHLer yet. You know, what it'll come down to, Rob, obviously, is his play. And I think there's a bit of a battle. You know, like, hockey is the most conservative sport.
Yep.
And they really try to push the individual away for the team. And to me, the biggest question that Gaudreau and his representation is going to have is what is too much too soon? Do you want to be doing a lot of this stuff when you're not a surefire NHLer yet? He sure looks like he's going
right.
to be,
yep.
But I think that's the biggest question they're going to have.
Yeah, because as you know, I mean, the Canadian teams can operate in anonymity if you don't have a marketable star. And
yep.
And to me, he's a great hockey player, could be a great hockey player, but he's not necessarily what we've known as, you know, the marketable. He's not what Jerome Iginla was, right? And I'm just fascinated.
No, he wasn't. But the thing is, he can still be. I don't think that really matters anymore. I think if you have creativity and you're a skilled player and you do things on the ice and you can accomplish things that a lot of guys can't necessarily accomplish,
yeah.
I still think you can be that guy. And, you know, he looks different. He's different. He's a small guy. He's a skilled guy. And he's exciting to watch. Like, when he was going on that tear there, Rob,
mm-hmm.
like, I couldn't tear my eyes away from
him. No, I agree.
And, you know, how many times do you guys go into Boston and you see a lot of Calgary Flames jerseys?
Yeah, that's true.
Now you might.
Yeah. Well, that's
great for you.
Yeah, that's what I'm just wondering about that, because it's been kind of an interesting week. I mean, you know, long time since a Flame not named Iginla was on the cover of any magazine, right?
Yes. And you know what it does? It also tells you that sometimes when you need to make your break, it's okay to make a break.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Jerome Iginla is a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
He's done a lot of great things for the Calgary Flames. But just because he's gone, it doesn't mean the world stops turning.
Good point.
And sometimes teams need to be reminded of that.
Good point, my friend. We will talk to you on Thursday. Thanks, Elliot.
All right. Take care, Rob. Have a great week.